Hi, everyone. Happy long weekend and welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm Kate Van Buskirk, the host and producer of this show. Today, we're rebroadcasting an episode from last July featuring the Lane 6 program. Lane 6 is a joint effort between Canadian Running Magazine, Nike, and Toronto Public Housing. This 8-week program provides run training and mentorship opportunities for local youth and was piloted last spring. It's now entering its second year, and the first mentor meetup was last week. In today's episode, former Shakeout producer Joan Chung talks with a number of mentors and youth who experienced deep transformations thanks to the program. But first, staff writer Maddie Kelly and I bring you the latest news and results from the track, roads, and trails. This is The Rundown.
Guys, and it's a long weekend. Happy long weekend, everyone.
Gonna go stuff yourself with some delicious food.
You're just chilling out at the house.
Yeah. Getting ready for the chocolate overload that is about to present itself to you.
Also, update. It's all about to be on sale. So why buy today what you can buy Monday for so cheap?
So much cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
It's pro tip right there.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks.
It's running fuel.
Well, Maddie, last week we talked about how busy the roads were in the racing scene.
Mm-hmm.
So this past weekend was sort of an extension of that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get right into it. The Vancouver Sun Run.
Vancouver Sun Run.
Took place last Sunday.
Mm-hmm. You bet it did. And it was actually sunny. The West Coast is having way better weather than us in Ontario right now.
Yeah.
Very jealous.
As we sit here looking out our window. Well, yesterday was really warm.
Yeah, yesterday was beautiful. Finally, double digits. We're excited about that.
But I feel like it was a bit of a teaser because the long range does not look promising. But that's okay. Congratulations to everyone on the West Coast enjoying your sunshine, especially for the Sun Run. So Natasha Wodak is very familiar with this course. She's a multi-time previous winner. She won in 32-38. And on the men's side, Justin Kent and Trevor Hofbauer had quite a showdown.
Oh my God, so tight. They crossed the finish line, literally photo finish, 29:30 for both of them. Justin Kent ended up taking the win, which is huge. He's having a really good spring season.
He is.
Actually, him and Lindsay Butterworth, they date. Both running very well.
Oh. Coincidence?
I don't know.
I think not.
Maybe things are good for them. And Hofbauer is going to the Hamburg Marathon next weekend.
Sweet.
Which is super exciting. So it's on the same day as the London Marathon. We're going to be keeping an eye on both. Huge names running both marathons. Yeah. And hopefully Trevor can come away with a big marathon PB.
Exciting stuff. So make sure that you tune into runningmagazine.ca for all of your updates and coverage. In the world of race walk, we had a pretty exciting weekend as well. Evan Dunphy of BC competed in the 50K in Wajima, Japan.
Mm-hmm.
He finished in 3 hours, 48 minutes, and 54 seconds, which, Maddie, is just under that 2020 Olympic qualifying standard of 3 hours and 50 minutes flat.
That is tight.
Very tight.
But he did it.
Got it done.
We have our first 2020 Olympian.
Pending the qualification process. But yes, everything does point to the fact that Evan will be there on that start line. Of course, Evan was sort of a temporary bronze medalist in the last Olympic Games.
Yes.
If you want to hear more about that story, go check out our many articles about it on Canadian Running Magazine. But he will have his shot at redemption in Tokyo 2020. And Evan will be leading the Canadian racewalking team, who is heading to Mexico for the Pan American Racewalking Cup on April 20th and 21st, so right around the corner.
Very, very soon.
Maddie, I feel like there was another road race a few days ago.
Let me think.
I can't put my finger on
it. Oh, let me think. Boston. That's it.
Where do we even start with our Boston coverage?
The women's race.
Bonkers. Unprecedented.
Truly unprecedented. No one has ever run away from a field like that before. Okay, and we knew also Worknish, everyone's favorite name ever for
fantastic.
A runner. Fantastic name. Anyway, so she comes in. She was kind of a favorite to win. She had the most recent personal best. She's run the fourth fastest women's time ever.
Ever.
And she ran it in January.
Right.
So clearly, obviously, barring like some injury we weren't aware of, she was fit. She comes in and they run as a pack, and then about 9K, getting on 10K, but not quite there, she just kind of says, see ya, runs away from the field.
Which we see that happen from time to time.
Totally.
It just hardly ever works.
No.
But don't. Again, work Nash. She knew.
She knew. You don't usually stay away. You don't usually actually put 3 minutes between you and the field and then are able to maintain. Not that she maintained the 3 minute gap, but she did end up winning. So Edna Kiplagat really got close. She ran out of road. Honestly, I wonder, had she gone even 2K earlier, what could have happened?
Yeah, I bet she's wondering the same thing.
I bet she is. But, I mean, Kiplagat's had an amazing career. She's been super consistent. She's been, like, a staple on the marathoning scene since, what, like, 2012?
Yeah, I mean, she's 39 years old, so she's been at it for a while.
She's almost a master's athlete. And she ran
224 and change.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. Yeah. Anyway, so I would almost say Kiplagat's race is equally as impressive because she was gutsy, she was patient, and then she made up enormous ground. So she really, really did a great job in that last quarter of the race.
Had it been a 43 or 44K race,
she would have been in trouble.
We would have seen some excitement, which, speaking of, we absolutely saw on the men's side. Very different race.
Very different race. I would actually say almost the gutsiest racer in the men's race were the Americans.
I would agree with that entirely.
Because they were the ones who kept the pace on us.
Yep.
You know, the pack was, there was like a pack of 40 through the half. And then the 40 kind of turned into 20 through about 30. Yep. But then there was still 10 together, almost with 5K to go. And the men who continued to push the pace were actually the Americans. And the Americans had really kind of been razzed for the last couple years because I would say the elite men's scene was looking weak relative to the women's scene.
Yeah, totally.
But they managed to get two guys under 210.
I know. So
super
exciting.
Super exciting.
Yeah. Great. Great excitement leading into next year's Olympics, of course. So the final results were Kenya's Lawrence Chirono winning by just over 1 second. Almost a photo finish in a 42-kilometer race.
It was literally a race around the block.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lalisa DeCisa, who was the 2013 and 2015 champion of the Boston Marathon, was a very close second. And then Kenneth Kipkemoi came about six seconds?
6 seconds behind. They were still together with about 500 meters to go. And then Kipkemoi just didn't have the legs that the other two had. But still, a very, very tight finish. Actually, not the tightest in history. There have been photo finishes, but a close race.
So our Canadians, we had a couple of elite Canadians. Josh Cassidy competed in the men's wheelchair race. Josh has been training in Guelph for a number of years now. He was ninth overall, but Maddie, he was likely still recovering because he actually won the LA Marathon handily.
Yeah, only 3 weeks ago. Yeah, and Josh has won Boston before. In 2012, he was 118 at the Boston Marathon. And it was the fastest wheelchair marathon time ever recorded, although it doesn't count as an official world record because Boston is a point-to-point.
Right.
But yeah, Josh raced so recently. We wonder if it was like a last-minute acceptance to Boston.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, just guessing. I would imagine a race like Boston, especially if you've been a winner in the past, just has so much prestige and so much excitement that if you're healthy enough to do it, it's sort of like, why not? What do you have to lose, really?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
So good for Josh.
Good for Josh. And then Krista on the women's side, seventh in the Masters division in 2:44:12. Krista said she, you know, again, super grateful for the experience and able to come back following her third place finish last year. But she did say the humidity was a factor.
Yeah. Very different race from last year.
Yeah.
In terms of the conditions.
Actually almost an identical time.
Right.
But a very different race.
Yes.
And a lot of Canadians are actually saying that the humidity was a factor for them. If you've trained through the cold all winter, your body's not totally used to being warm. Being warm for the first time in a marathon, not ideal.
Right.
But you know what? It happens. That's running outside.
That's it. And there's always going to be something that someone complains about when it comes to weather.
Totally.
You know, the fact that it was warmer, less rain, less wind, more sun this year.
Yeah.
Probably for most people was a good thing, but to your point, if
the Canadians like it dark and ugly.
Dark and ugly. It was not. Anyway, another awesome Canadian woman's performance in the Boston Marathon. Actually, our first Canadian female across the line.
Kate Gustafson.
Way to go, Kate Gustafson. She's a mile to marathon coach.
It was a PB. Actually, her brother was super cute on Twitter. He like responded.
That's right.
He responded to her story and he's like, yo, that's my sister. Which is really sweet.
Way to be a cheerleader for your sister there, buddy.
I think so many cheerleaders.
Way to go.
Congratulations on your run.
Congratulations to all of our Canadians that competed in Boston.
Joan Benoit Samuelson ran a 304 marathon 40 years after her historic win in 1979. She's 61 years old.
Yep.
This is so fast. And Boston is such a hard course. And she was super cool. She ran it in like the exact same outfit that she ran the marathon in 40 years ago. And totally. She has really paved the path for, honestly, I would say women running.
Yep.
Internationally.
Absolutely.
So as a female runner myself, I felt lucky to be able to watch that.
Yep. It was super cool. Joan went into Monday's race with the goal of coming on the 40th anniversary of her first Boston run, coming within 40 minutes of that first time, which was 2:35:15. And of course, she blew that out of the water. She ran less than 30 minutes off of that time, as you mentioned.
That is aging well. That is aging gracefully.
Like fine wine.
Like fine wine. But Boston isn't all about the marathon, ladies and gentlemen. There is also a 5K. And Justin Knight is back.
Yeah, he is.
He had a pretty lackluster indoor season, which he admitted himself. Yeah. I talked with him this week, and I said, what happened in your indoor season? And he said, Maddie, I was out of shape. And I said, that's so refreshingly honest. So
sounds like he got in shape pretty mm-hmm. quick.
But he did get in shape because he was third in a really, really stacked field at the BAA 5K on Saturday. So, and Justin was only 10 seconds off of Paul Williams' outdoor, like, road 5K record, which is one of the oldest records on the board right now.
It is.
For Canadians. So for, you know, him to open in that strong of a race and finish that high in a field like that, it really bodes well for his outdoor season because this is his first year running professionally outdoors.
Yeah.
And we're very excited to see what JK can do on the track.
We are. And we're also excited to see what his training partner and good buddy Benny Flanagan can do, because Ben came fourth to Justin's third in that 5K.
Just 4 seconds behind Justin.
Super respectable time.
Super respectable time.
These guys are running really well. And again, it's a long season. They've got a lot of time ahead of them to be running this well in the 5K.
Side note, if you're interested in seeing what they do in training, Ben Flanagan, as of today, is on Strava. So Whoa. For all of you training fanatics, you can go take a look at Ben's stats.
Moving on to the track, we are just sort of still entering the bulk of the outdoor track season, but our sprinters had some pretty phenomenal performances in Grenada. At the Grenada Invitational last weekend, three of our top male sprinters, Aaron Brown, Andre DeGrasse, and Brendan Rodney, all competed. Brown was second in the 100 in a very respectable time of 10.13. DeGrasse came second in the 200 in 20.2, and Rodney was fourth in that race in 20.63.
So these men are all gearing up for the World Relays, which are beginning on May 6th. And that is partly why there are so many sprint results that are so fast so early. Right. And on the women's side in the 400 meter, two standout athletes, Travia Jones and Carlene Muir, placed third and fourth respectively. Jones ran a 53.9 and Muir ran a 54.1.
Excellent job, ladies. Moving on to the trails, we've got some exciting performances and results to cover. So starting off, Katie Mills won the Diaz Vista 50K in Port Moody, BC by only 19 seconds.
Which is nothing.
Nothing. It's nothing in a marathon. It's truly nothing in a 50K.
Yeah.
Especially given how it sounds like it played out. So Victoria's Jenny Springings actually led Katie Mills for a good chunk of the race. And it wasn't till the last couple hundred meters that Katie got her sprint on and blew by Jenny to take the win. Sounds like both these women had an epic battle to the finish. So good job, ladies.
Photo finish in a trail race.
19 seconds is a photo finish in a trail race.
Yeah,
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I would agree. And honestly, photo finish in the marathon, photo finish in trail. This is more exciting than track.
Sure is. Sticking with our Canadian women's results from the trails, Anne-Marie Madden, we've talked about her quite a bit in the past on this podcast.
Never met her. Sounds like a rock star.
Sounds like a total badass. She cracked the top 10 in a stacked field at the Lake Sonoma 50 miler. So way to go, Anne-Marie. You keep that streak going because you're on fire.
And residents of St. John's in Newfoundland are rallying to stop the proposed building of a penitentiary on the White Hills Trail Network.
Runners, walkers, and mountain bikers are concerned about the destruction of this heavily used unique green space and are petitioning the provincial government to relocate the correctional facility.
Sounds like a noble cause to me. You gotta protect your green space.
Well, and apparently this network of trails is part of this, you know, beautiful stretch of land that overlooks the Atlantic Ocean. It's, you know, pretty epic views. It's heavily used, as you mentioned, by a lot of different recreational athletes. It sounds like these people just want to keep their trails.
Yeah, running in Newfoundland is super special. It's one of the favorite races I've ever done. And I hate cross country, but I liked it there.
There you go.
Yeah,
So Maddie's on board.
I'm totally on board.
This has been your rundown for this week. Maddie and I will chat with you again soon.
Like, I was sort of like a little bit nervous because when I first met her, I was like quiet, wasn't really talking to that much.
I was a little bit nervous that my mentee wasn't going to like me or we weren't going to connect.
It's Saturday morning, late spring. The sun is shining and a school bus pulls into the parking lot of Central Tech Stadium in downtown Toronto. A group of students, age 7 to 18, stream off the bus and gather on the blue oval track, joining a crowd of coaches and mentors. There's a mix of excitement and nervousness in the air. Everyone gathered is part of the Lane 6 program. And for 6 weeks, these students, at-risk youth, and their mentors will meet, will run, and will learn. On this week's episode of The Shakeout, we take you to the Central Tech track, where this next generation of track athletes and runners met with their mentors, runners from the community, to learn lessons in running and in life. The Lane 6 program is a partnership among Canadian Running, Nike Toronto, and Toronto Community Housing.
You know, a lot of what we're hearing from the kids today who don't have access to sport, who don't have access to mentors, is not only that they really want to be part of these types of programs, but what's really interesting is they recognize kind of the faces that come back week after week, and they see that as some consistency in their lives and a little bit more of, I guess, commitment from people to help them and to be part of their journeys.
That's Claire Rankin, Nike's Director of Communication. Nike's involvement with community programs is not something new. It's part of their mandate.
At Nike, we believe if you have a body, you're an athlete, and we really are here to serve athletes. I think from a kid's perspective, we believe strongly that kids are made to play and that they need access to sport. And it's something that as a brand overall, not just in Canada, but globally, that we feel very passionately about. And so Lane 6 was a natural evolution for us in terms of how we can bring this to life in the Canadian market and really help kids play.
They've been involved with providing access to sport, but this one-on-one mentorship was something unique.
So we've been working with Toronto Community Housing for a little while now, and I don't know if you know that they serve the poorest 1% of our city. And there's not always programs available for kids ongoing that are after-school programs that allow the kids to get access to not just the mentors, the gear, and the services, but all those things combined. And so they were really excited. We typically host programs for them in basketball, and we've done a few programs for them in running before, but never anything from a mentorship perspective. And so they were really excited.
To get this program off the ground, there were key positions that needed to be filled. One of these positions was the one of run coach.
I mean, I've been a runner for forever. I started running when I was really young in elementary school and was on the track and cross country team all through high school and university. I was kind of brought in to be a part of the sessions and help lead the actual sessions.
Brittany Moran, chiropractor, sub-elite runner, and Nike Plus Run Club coach, was enlisted to lead the running aspect of Lane 6. And although her role was to provide technical guidance for the runners, her motivation to be involved with the project was much more personal.
Well, it actually, and it took kind of over the whole 6 weeks, took me some time to kind of realize, but, you know, I grew up and I was fortunate to go to schools where running was a big deal and I was encouraged to run. There was great coaches that I was surrounded by. And having worked with these kids, I realized that not everyone has that. So there's not always a track and field program. There's not always a cross-country program at these elementary schools. And so some of these kids just aren't even getting the exposure to running. So they're not even having the opportunity to try it out. And so that was really eye-opening for me. And so I was so excited that I could show these kids how great running can be.
A big part of this program was the mentorship aspect of it. Each of the runners were paired with a mentor, and throughout the 6 weeks, they would work together one-on-one.
Canadian Running's kind of goal was to just connect with clubs, connect with runners as an open project. And then we had an amazing response. We just did a small like Facebook local call out in Toronto. And we were expecting maybe like 15 to 20 responses, and we had about 150 in like a day. So that was pretty awesome to see.
Joel Vosberg from Canadian Running was brought in to help with Lane 6, to recruit volunteers for the program, and to create a selection process for the mentors.
So the mentors was they had to be active in the running community, had to have an open personality as we were going to be dealing one-on-one with kids. And then the goal was to try to get people in the ages between like just when they're kind of finished university or in university to about maybe 35. The goal of that was just usually people that age say don't have a family, don't have kids at the moment. So it's kind of a way for them to connect and give back to and introduce younger kids to running at the age when they got into it. So that was kind of the main goal with that.
Each week of running was planned out by the coaches to ensure that the younger runners would stay engaged with the program.
So Joel from Canadian Running took the big lead on planning out the sessions, and I would review them and give any opinions that I had. And the big thing was, you know, of course, working with the younger age group, you know, keeping their attention is the big key. So we wanted to make it that it was fun. So we tried to do things, you know, do them for short little bursts and make them into a fun setting. So, you know, doing some sprints where you're racing your mentor or you're racing the other kid.
We introduced them to sprinting, to long distance, to kind of a combination of middle distance events. So doing some tempo drills, doing racing, kind of keeping everything light and hard and trying to keep it away from being pure running, just one foot for the other, but kind of keeping it fun and light the whole time.
And it wasn't just running that was important to the program.
The other thing we really wanted to emphasize too was taking the time to actually sit down with your mentor at the beginning of each session and break down some goals for that session and for the long term of the 6 weeks. So we wanted to kind of, you know, help the kids to accomplish something and feel that they had reached a goal by the end of it.
In order to train the mentors to assist with both the running and the goal setting aspects of Lane 6, each one had to attend a mandatory training session with an organization called Up to Us Sports, a U.S.-based nonprofit organization.
The goal is to use sports not just as a place of fun and athletics, but also a unique opportunity to learn life lessons and build skills that make kids from all backgrounds successful.
That's Andy Nielsen, the national training manager for Up to Us Sports. According to Nielsen, Up to Us Sports has a unique focus that fit in well with Lane 6.
And I think what's really different about Up to Us Sports is that the coach training that we do is focused on working with kids who've experienced trauma. So we build trauma-sensitive coaching skills so that kids who are going through the most challenges and need the positive benefits of sport the most are able to access that through highly trained coaches.
What the mentors learned from this training program was a simple strategy called how to improve your coaching in 7 words or less. What this provided for the mentors, who may not necessarily have had a lot of experience working with kids, in particular kids who may have experienced some trauma, was a means of communicating with them with sensitivity and simplicity.
So, for example, if you see a kid who is standing over in the corner by themselves, you know, you want to be on the lookout for that and make sure that that child gets attention and that that child feels included and welcome. We don't know like what sorts of backgrounds these kids are coming from. And, you know, if they have had any trauma in their life or if they've, you know, had experiences that were negative, whether it's within their family or at school. And so you just want to be sensitive to that and just make sure that they're all enjoying themselves.
Lindsay McAdam,
writer and editor in Toronto, is now an avid runner. But it wasn't always that way.
I started back up again in my 20s. I was never like the fastest runner or anything like that, but I've always really loved it. And it's been such a good opportunity to meet people and a stress reliever. And it's just, yeah, a really great part of my life. I actually lived in a whole bunch of places all over Canada growing up, pretty small towns though. And so none of the schools that I went to had a track and field program. So I never had the opportunity to take part in something like that, which is kind of what drew me a lot to this Lane 6 program, because I just thought, I mean, I know that a lot of schools in Ontario do have those programs, but some of these kids may not have encouragement from home to participate, or maybe their school isn't really that involved in track and field. And so I just thought it would be so nice to help to expose them to the sport.
In addition to sharing her passion for running with the younger generation, McAdam, who wrote a weekly blog on the Canadian Running website about her experiences at Lane 6, explains the program would also give her the opportunity to work with kids, something she hadn't had much experience in previously.
I guess growing up as the youngest child in the family, you know, I was never babysitting my siblings or anything like that, so I didn't have really that chance to take care of kids. And so, as I mentioned in my post, I never really felt like I had that natural ability to really connect with kids. So for me, I wanted to experience that, and I wanted to try to build those skills that aren't a part of my regular day-to-day life. And yeah, for me, you know, thinking about having a family and all that kind of stuff, I need to build those skills and get comfortable being around kids.
For the next 6 weeks, McAdam would be paired up with 14-year-old Sabrina, who had an unfortunate accident leading into the program.
At school, I was chasing this boy because he had my bag, and I broke my ankle, and I jumped like a couple steps like that I shouldn't have, and then I had to go to the hospital. I was worried that I couldn't do the things that I love to do, like play gym, run and stuff.
Injury aside, I asked Sabrina how she felt leading into Lane 6 and if she had been excited about it.
Well, I was, but like I was sort of like a little bit nervous because my ankle was like sort of like hurting, but I was excited.
Nervousness was to be expected. After all, the mentees, the kids, had been gathered from various schools and had different levels of running experience, and would be expected to learn new skills, test their strength and speed, and meet new people. For McAdam, the mentor, it was also a nerve-wracking experience.
I think I was nervous. I remember that we would have this high five tunnel every session when the kids would come in, and I remember seeing some of the kids' faces, and on the first day, they were not looking too excited, I've got to say. There were a few of them who had smiles, and the rest of them were kind of like looking at us, skeptical, who are these weirdos? And so I was a little bit nervous that my mentee wasn't going to like me, or we weren't going to connect, or that she'd think I was a big nerd or something. So yeah, I would definitely say I was a little bit nervous.
Sabrina and McAdam met that first week when Sabrina got off the school bus at Central Tech. She had a couple friends in the program and was also joined by her brother, Joseph.
Yeah, I met her like when we got there and we were like ready to like start exercising and get ready to run. And they told everyone, your mentors, and I met her that time. I was like, she's pretty and stuff, and like, she's nice and stuff like that.
She was a little bit shy. She was sort of a combination of both. Definitely a little shy at first, but she did warm up to me really quickly. And I remember actually being very surprised at how quickly she started telling me pretty private details about her life. So I felt pretty quickly as though she was letting me in, and that she responded well to me and was eager to be a part of the program.
Yeah, I was like, when I first met her, I was like quiet, wasn't really talking to that much, I wasn't myself really. And then when I, as the weeks goes by, I started like talking to her and stuff, and I talked more and I talked to her about what's happening and stuff. And yeah.
The first activity Coach Moran had planned for the group was a 5-minute time trial.
One of the things we did kind of throughout all the sessions was a 5-minute kind of time trial. So seeing how many times you could get around the track in 5 minutes, just to kind of have something where it was consistent throughout. So that was kind of our baseline that we did on the first day was just, you know, we're going to time you for 5 minutes. We want you to try and run as far as you can in that 5 minutes.
Running longer distances doesn't always come easy to younger runners. And for Sabrina, both with her injured ankle and without having a lot of prior running experience, it was particularly challenging.
I told her I broke my ankle, so she knows. And I was, at that time, like, my ankle felt, it hurted, and I was sort of limping a little bit. I don't know why.
There were lots of challenges. She had not done much running at all beyond the typical, you know, running to play tag or basketball, things like that. So she hadn't done any sort of distance running. And yeah, she definitely wanted to stop soon after we started. So there was a lot of walking.
I like going really fast, but Lindsay told me that I should not just go running fast first, like slow down at the beginning, but then after at the end, sprint.
For someone who had not had a lot of experience working with kids, and for someone who insisted she did not have a natural maternal instinct, McAdam was able to use her training and some common sense to try to motivate her mentee when she didn't seem to want to run.
I tried a few different tactics. I would tell her a bit about my running background, you know, how long you have to keep running in a marathon. So like 5 minutes is nothing compared to 3.5 hours. I tried, you know, just keeping the conversation going and asking her to tell me a story and try and focus on that instead of how tired you are. Told her we could go slower if she needed to, as slow as she wanted, and just trying to maintain a slow pace for a longer period of time is better than going too fast, because the kids naturally want to go really fast. And so sometimes she did do that as well, and then she would get more tired. So I tried to explain that if you go slower at a consistent pace, you can last longer.
Well, she said that you have to do it, just do it. Remember the logo, just do it. And she said, if I'm cold or something, I can easily just put my jacket or something on, or if I'm thirsty, I can just bring water while I'm running. And she just taught me to like do what I want and also run the second time.
As I mentioned before, McAdam shared her experiences on a weekly basis throughout the Lane 6 program. And as I read her last entry containing her final reflections, what I and other readers discovered was that during Lane 6, she had undergone an incredible personal loss.
So yes, I had found out that I was pregnant, I think a couple weeks before the program started. And so when we started, I was in the early weeks of the pregnancy, but we had a few breaks in between because of weather and holidays and various things. So yeah, throughout the program, my pregnancy became further along, and I can't remember which week it was, but one Saturday, the day before, I had found out that I was going to lose the baby. And that was a very difficult time, but I still showed up to Lane 6 the next day, and I think it was very difficult, but being there really helped, I think. Because it was just such a positive environment and it took my mind off of what was going on. And yeah, I mentioned in the blog post as well that I actually had a doctor's appointment to talk about next steps right after our Lane 6 program on Saturday. And I was actually late for the appointment because I was just enjoying myself so much and so caught up in the program that I forgot what time it was and I had to run over there. So I ended up having a miscarriage a couple days after that. And it was a horrible experience, but the kids were there through the whole thing to keep my spirits up. And you know, the coaches and the mentors, they didn't know what was going on with me, but it helped anyway. And I think it was just very important for me to be involved in that at that time. And, you know, I never could have known what was going to happen, but I just think it kind of seems like it was meant to be that I was going through that while I was a part of such a wonderful program.
For McAdam, who had been so motivated, not only by her desire to give back and to share her passion for running with the younger generation, but also considering her own future plans to learn from the younger generation and to become more comfortable around kids, this loss must have been incredibly difficult. But as she wrote in her final entry, sometimes the universe gives you exactly what you need. And for McAdam, what she needed was running.
Yeah, honestly, there's so many, not even just this, but there's so many, you know, hard things that you have to go through in life. And running has always been a way to make me feel better about all of it, no matter what it is. And a lot of community that you become a part of when you're a runner, even if you run by yourself, you know, you're passing someone and they smile at you, or you're at a race and you get to talking with the people beside you, or the people that you meet up with every Saturday, do your long runs with, you know, you develop such close relationships and really helps you get through all those tough parts of life. And I hope that through this program, some of these kids have developed an interest in running that hopefully will see them through as they get older, and hopefully it'll be something they can turn to help them when they go through difficult times.
The Lane 6 Project was designed to give at-risk youth an opportunity to run and an opportunity to love running.
It was definitely a baby step for Sabrina in particular, but there was definite improvement in a few different aspects. So part of what we did in each session was warm-up drills, where we kind of worked on the technique with the ABCs, you know, to improve your form. And we worked on a few different drills that would enforce a proper form. And so I tried to encourage her to, you know, keep her head up and swing her arms, things like that. Stay in her own lane, very important one. So I definitely saw those things improve as the weeks went on.
Well, for me, the first week, I got like one lap done for like in 5 minutes because my ankle problem. But as I went, I got to like 2.5.
In terms of a breakthrough, I would say definitely on our last session, we did races. The kids raced against each other for different distances. And so she had been sort of unofficially racing her brother, who was also part of the program, every week here and there. So they definitely had a sort of competitive sibling rivalry going on.
Yeah, we always like to see who wins. We always like to be... And he always says he runs faster, but I think I'm a little bit faster than him.
Not all of the kids will continue running, but the success of Lane 6 can be seen in the relationships and trust that formed between the mentors and their mentees, and the willingness of the kids to improve, to challenge themselves.
I kind of reached out to all the mentors and got their reviews. And the hardest part for the mentors was just knowing that they might not see this child again. If hopefully if we restart this program up in the fall, we can get some of the same kids back. But just seeing like the connection, it was only 6 weeks, it was only 2 hours every Saturday. And just like the personal connections everybody had made was pretty amazing. And just seeing where everybody was at when it started, a little bit nervous. And then where it was just like complete friendships have bonded between 8-year-olds to 14-year-olds, between like these 20 to 30-year-old kind of adults, and definitely in two very different stages in life, but totally connected through this running program.
As McAdam said her goodbyes to Sabrina during the final week of Lane 6, she wondered if Sabrina would continue to run.
Yeah, maybe like once in a while, or I don't know, depending how I'm feeling, but I might, I don't know.
I said, I'll see you at the track, and gave her a wink. She didn't seem super keen on continuing to run, but I hope that if nothing else, it sort of exposed her to the possibility. She could definitely have a lot of potential at the shorter distances. And yeah, I encouraged her to try out for her high school track team. I don't know if she will, but yeah, you never know.
We'd like to thank Lindsay McAdam, Brittany Moran, Andy Nielsen, Claire Rankin, Joel Vosberg, and Sabrina for their contributions this week. And thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Shakeout Podcast, and be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. If you enjoyed listening to this and our other episodes, please write a review for us on iTunes. We are bringing you this podcast weekly. If you like it and are wondering how you can support us, please subscribe to Canadian Running Magazine in print or the digital edition. This certainly helps us bring you more great content. And finally, we'd like to thank the Ontario Media Development Corporation for their contributions to this podcast. Thanks for listening.